Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is Rena Owen from Freeform's new mermaid mystery series, Siren. She plays the very enigmatic and charming and mysterious Helen. Hi, Rena.
Hi, hi. Thank you so much for having me on your show. And yes, I love playing enigmatic Miss Helen and Siren.
I am completely addicted to this show. I mean, it's almost like the show itself has its own siren song. And it's just everyone has got their own little agendas going on. And Helen's get more and more compelling every single episode. And I am a complete fan of you and the show. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. That's great news. And it kind of was a bit like that for us as actors when we shot the first season, because we never knew what was going to happen until we got the new script. We'd always be, what if? It kind of kept everyone on edge. So I understand what you're saying, because nothing's ever answered in any given episode. It's just things are put out there, and then you've got to wait for the answers. And so it kind of gave us an excited edginess, because none of us knew. And sometimes we'd literally just get the script like the week before we started shooting it. So yeah, it's been an exciting process, and it's great to see how each episode has come together. And like you say, it's very informative. There's a lot of information in every episode, and there's a lot of answers that people want. And, you know, people are coming up with all kinds of conspiracy theories, and I think it's fantastic. They now think the latest one is they think that Helen could be the long-lost mother of Rin and Donna.
Ooh. That I missed that one. I missed that little tidbit. Yeah, because
that's the most recent one. Yeah,
I follow the live tweeting. I even jump in there every now and then, and seeing all of the conspiracy theories, everybody's so on edge, hoping that, you know, some of the guys safe, that Rin and Donna will stay safe, and everybody's got all sorts of machinations, and it's just so much fun. Did you? As an actor, were you interested? Were you just excited by what the writers were doing with everybody's characters?
Absolutely. As I just was saying before, it's because we never knew. And we weren't told, like, right at the beginning, certain departments got overviews of every episode. And I remember saying to the writer, I hear there's this kind of treatment going around that outlines every episode. Do you think we could get that as actors so we could start preparing? And he's like, no, we don't want our writers to have that, because we don't, you know, it's changing, it's evolving. And also, too, they didn't want actors getting stuck on certain ideas, because those ideas were subject to change. So absolutely, it was always exciting and thrilling to go, oh my God, what's in this next episode? What's going to happen to everybody? And it's very much an ensemble piece. Ensemble being, it's an ensemble piece. You care about what's going on with everyone, and of course you care about what your character's purpose is in every episode. And there were a few things I didn't find out until we actually got around to shooting certain episodes. So you've got stuff to look forward to.
And I'm glad about that. I'm really glad about that. So what, for you, without going into any spoiler territories, what is the most fun, the most challenging for you for playing Helen?
Well, I guess for me it was, you know, I knew that she has mermaid in her history. You guys won't get to find out specific stuff till later, but for me, I knew that when I went in an audition for the role, because when I read the pilot, there were giveaway signs. It's like that the biggest giveaway sign was the interaction she had when she first saw Rin come to land, and she's there, and I'm standing opposite this girl who I know is a mermaid. Oh, I said, sorry. Is a mermaid. And we actually had a little bit of dialogue. She did some mermaid speech to me, and that kind of really shooketh Helen up. And I knew in that moment, I also knew because of Helen's disdain for this fairy tale mermaid. And when she, at the end of the first episode, she tells Ben about his family's history. And I just knew then, and I auditioned. And when I got the role and we went to shoot the pilot, I said to the writers, am I right in believing that Helen's got some kind of mermaid history? And they said, absolutely, absolutely. They did not give me the details. So like you guys, I didn't know the specific details of exactly what her mermaid history was, but you will find out. So that for me was the challenging part, because I didn't quite know. I just knew that she had this mermaid history, and that's all I knew. But it did really help me to formulate this more of a mysterious character who kind of lives in this unknown world, and she's got secrets, and sometimes you see her and sometimes you don't, and it's a great challenge, but the best kind of challenge, because the character created itself in a lot of ways just based on the information I had. And that, you know, she was the odd, you know, Fowler's character. Maddie called her the town nut job in episode 2. So I'm like, okay, that was a really hurtful piece of information. But a good piece of information, because I'm like, okay, so that's how the town folks have viewed Helen all these years. They think she's a nutshell. And the reason they think she's a nutshell is she's always gone on and on and on about mermaids and the fact that they're real. They're not fantasy. They're not fairy tales. Mermaids are real, and they're a very real species. And as we have seen in the first half dozen episodes, Helen's all about protecting them. And I think some of the fans out there don't understand why Helen has kind of been pushing to get them back into the water. And the reason she has been on this, like, you've got to get you back into the water, is because they're not safe on land. The mermaids are not safe, and human beings around them are not safe. And I know what they're capable of, and I know what could go down. So for me, it's get them back into the water where I know at least they're going to be a lot safer in the water than they're going to be on land. So, you know, it's interesting. I thought the way that the episode ended last night, it's like, well, okay, Donna's gone back. Runs here on land, and she's been caught by the cops. So, you know, and it's like, I remember Helen thinking, I'd love to go and rescue Rin, but I can't, because then I would out myself. And at the moment, the only person I've come out to is Donna. You know, Rin already senses that from day one, since I was a mer person. So it's not like I can go down to that cop shop and say, give me my girl back, I'm taking her home. You know, I'm not outed in the community. So it keeps it exciting, because it's like, how are these things going to be done? You know, how am I going to educate characters about the specifics of my history? So you've got a lot of good stuff to look forward to, and I can't wait for you all to. I know that episode 7 is sensational. That's going to be. I always thought on page it was a phenomenal script, a phenomenal, very powerful episode, and I think you saw at the end of the last episode is that they're going out to sea.
Mm-hmm.
So you are safe in assuming that a lot of the episode will take place out on the sea. That's a valid assumption. I'd make that assumption if I was thinking and going, oh well, they're getting on a boat and they're gonna be hunting Donna.
Yeah,
for Donna.
The teaser after last night's episode was mind blowing and fear inducing. Like, oh no, who's the? No, wait, they're throwing a body overboard. That's not good. Helen's history is almost more interesting to me than what Ben and Maddie are trying to do with Rin, because you're right, the hints about Helen's backstory are there. There's a steely glint that she gets in her eye when she's telling Ben about his family's history, And you're like, whoa, she's taking that kind of personal. Where is that coming from? And it just unfolds so beautifully. But this story is the fact that it's specific to this one town, that this one town is closest to where the mermaids are. I can't wait to find out more history about the connection between the towns, because if Helen's walking around, who else is walking around that knows more than they're saying, or might even
That's
be
exactly right.
A hybrid?
You're on it, and one of the characters alluded to that. I'm sorry, I'm not in front of my computer right now, but the main military guy, he says that. He says they can transform. They can be living among us. And it's such a powerful line. He says that they can be living among us.
Yep.
And I can't remember which episode it was in, but it was teased a lot on the trailer. They can transform, which means they can be living among us. And that's exactly right. That means there's a lot of storyline out there to explore. And who I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's what none of us really know. But, yeah, it could turn out that there are a lot of people out there that could be, like you say, hybrids. Who knows? All I know right now is that Rin and Donna are definitely mermaids, and I'm a merperson, and I have a history that you're going to quite get the specifics for eventually. But it kind of leaves everything up in the air in terms of, like, what an amazing season two you could have, because you've got all these questions and this whole world of discovery, and it's thrilling, and it is exciting, and you know, and it's a real privilege as an actor. You know, I've been around a long time, and I've done a lot of things, to be in something where there is this genuine fandom going down. You know, and I have so much love and respect for the people out there, and I've seen more and more of them every day on social media, that are professional mermaids, and that mermaids have been their passion their entire lives, and there's mermaid conventions, and it's like being in a mini Star Wars world again, you know, because I had that same experience with Star Wars when I did Star Wars without really knowing what I had, the world I had become a part of. I had no idea until they took me to a convention, and I'm like, oh my God, Star Wars is a religion. It's extraordinary. You know, it was. I had no idea. And I'm like, people lining up for hours to get an autograph from someone who'd just been on screen for 2 seconds, or dressed up as that character, or... It was just an extraordinary experience. And you know, it's a real privilege as an actor when you can be a part of a world that has that power to suck people in and keep them guessing and keeping them wanting and keeping them asking questions. Because it takes... not every show can do that, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think Siren is doing it so well right now. I personally have been pleasantly surprised by... Because as an actor, I'm going to be honest, and I won't be the only actor who says that. You know, there's times it can get quite frustrating, because guess what? You want to know. You want the answers. And they're like, well, that's kind of a work in progress right now. So, you know, it's as much a journey for the writers as it was for us, as they kind of figured out which way they wanted to go, because that was reflective of how many choices they had in terms of material. They had a lot of material to choose from, as you can imagine.
I'm just happy that they decided to take the familiar legends and myths we have about mermaids and throw them all out the window and start with something different. And actually, you know, as you saw in the first episode, have them thumb their noses at everything mermaid. Oh, this is not your grandma's mermaid.
No, this isn't your fairy tale comic book mermaid. And I think, you know, Eric, our godfather, I call him our godfather, the man who created us and created this world, our writer, executive producer, Eric Wilde, he said, he always based it, he's the first one to say this, and he talked about it, and you can actually see the influences, but he said one of the films that had such a significant effect on him as a young person was Jaws. was Jaws, was the movie Jaws. And, you know, and he thought, well, if they really were mermaids, they wouldn't be kind of lying around being pretty little things posing on shells. They'd be eating in the deep waters. They'd be eating and they'd be hunting and they'd have to be predators in order to survive. And if you look at the characters, and it was actually one of the best things that I was given as a guideline towards the character of Helen, because we'd shot the pilot and then we were in pre-production getting ready to shoot the season. And our showrunner, who's also a producer, and he said, you know, he said, because if you can rewatch Star, he said, did you see, not Star Wars, sorry, Jaws? I said, of course I did. He said, well, it would be good if you could rewatch it. And he said, pay particular attention to the character of Quint, played brilliantly by the British actor Robert Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of Jaws and you think of that character, as soon as I watched it, I knew exactly the flavor they wanted for Helen. Exactly. And Quint, you'll see that if you actually, you know, if you've got the time to watch it at all, you will see that. You'll see that influence of Quint in Helen and Helen's world. Because he's the guy, he's the shark expert. He's the one that says to them, you don't know what you're dealing with. He says, you don't, you know, he's the one that knows what they're capable of. And it's very much reflected in Helen when I'm pretty much the first few episodes. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm saying, I'm warning them. I'm going, you don't know what you're dealing with. You don't know what you're up against.
Yeah.
Our mermaids will rip a shark's head off. And if you ever do get to watch Jaws again, you know, you'll see exactly what I mean. And, God, as soon as I watched it, the first thing that surprised me is even though I'd seen it when it first came out, it still made me jump. It still put me on the edge of my seat.
Yes.
And that character, Quint, that he was a big stepping stone for me in terms of helping to define Helen as a human being.
Yeah, that Jaws is also one of my favorite movies. I saw that in the theaters. I was only like 10 or 11 years old. So it made a huge impact on me. And just Quint was... He was the one who's like, I'm telling you, you don't know what you're up against. Okay, I'll just wait until he eats 8 or 9 more of you, and then you'll finally understand. And he's expecting them to go out and get eaten. He's not even going to try to warn them anymore. He's like, I told you once, you'll learn on your own.
Yeah, and then you can see the familiarity there with the character of Helen and Quinta. So I thought I was just so thrilled because I thought, now I know Helen's place in the story. You know, just gave me the flavor of her. They're kind of realistic, like you just said. Yeah, well, go out. You know, you're going to get swallowed whole by a shark. I don't really care. I'm trying to tell you, you don't listen. You know, kind of quite pragmatic in some ways. But when you look at Bristol Cove, you know, like Jaws, it's a small coastal community of ordinary, everyday people. You know, but beneath the surface is this dangerous shark. And in our case, it's mermaids. And I think, you know, what's so exciting? I mean, you've got a merman. If you look at that trailer, the two things that have really stood out for me with the teaser is, yes, you're seeing that body going overboard so somebody has gotten killed. But before that, you're seeing the flash of this merman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, whoa. And that's what, you know... One of the characters says, what the hell is that? Well, honey, that is our first merman.
Yep.
And I'm really excited. Yep. Really exciting.
Yeah, that trailer is like, you see, he's fast, he's armed, and he's obviously angry, so it's not going to end well.
We see the body bag go overboard.
Oh my goodness, but yeah, it sounds like you had as much fun making this as we are watching this. So where can fans find you online? Because you have been live tweeting along with the broadcast lately.
That's right, and this is kind of something new to me, and I've definitely embraced social media because, you know, back in the days, always part of an actor's contract to help promote your show. 20 years ago, we'd go out and we'd do interviews with journalists and we'd do photo shoots and that kind of stuff. Well, now it's called social media. So I'm very active on Instagram, and I do live tweet now at the show, but my primary place is Instagram. It's at Renna Owen.
Okay.
On Twitter, it's at Renna Owen. But I actually first started on Facebook, and so my professional page on Facebook is the Renna Owen. For some reason, I couldn't get Renna Owen because somebody else was using the name. So it's the Renna Owen on Facebook. But I'm posting mostly on Instagram because the advantage of Instagram is it's a photo and a few words, and you can share it from Instagram. It goes to Twitter and Facebook in one post. But yeah, definitely live tweeting with the show when the show's on. But yeah, Instagram, definitely, just Renna Owen, basically Renna Owen on Instagram, Renna Owen on Twitter, and the Renna Owen on Facebook. But that's Instagram is my primary social media. And, you know, it took me time to learn how to do all of this, and it's a time-consuming activity. But I see it as part of my job. And it's been great because, once again, I'm learning from fans, and I'm learning about all these mermaid people out there around the world. It's extraordinary. Like, being around the world, it's like... you know, and it's how I feel like I've entered into a world of fandom that's been obviously going on for a long time, a lot longer than our TV show Siren. It's been going on for decades, mermaids, and those that are believers and those that are professional mermaids, and they're extraordinary, some of them, in the videos they make. Yeah, you can probably tell I am spending a little too long on social media.
Well, think of it as doing deep background research for season two.
That's a great way I can justify. But, you know, I'd be very happy to talk with you again, too. And, you know, should you decide, we'll have a lot to talk about after the season finale. Because by then, a lot of the cats would have been let out of the bag, and a lot of specific would have been provided about various characters, including Helen.
Well, I will look forward to that. In the meantime, thank you for sharing your mermaid secrets and your Jaws analysis with us today.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, love. And hopefully we'll get to talk again at some point once all the SHIT has gone down and we've come to season one has come to an end.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you. Wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa, the first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award, with weekly stories from the world's best authors, Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more, with news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pole, Wolf, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me right now is Bruce Kirschenbaum, the executive producer of a little indie horror film we covered a few years back called Live Evil, which chronicles a very bad Halloween night at a small town police station and how they get through it all, or maybe not. Hi, Bruce. How you doing?
Hi. Thanks, Summer, for having me on the show.
So I don't know if a lot of our listeners remember Live Evil, but I certainly do. And why don't you tell us the journey this film's been on since it was released way back when? I think it was 2015?
It had its theatrical premiere actually in 2016 in Chicago, Raleigh, Indiana. And then we took our journey to try and get it onto online, which is... for an indie, it has become something of a journey. It's a different distribution system. So we maneuvered the distribution system, and now we're on iTunes. And we like this because it takes us to 13 English-speaking countries, which we'd never get otherwise.
Right, and it now gives you a chance to expand to horror fans outside of North America, which is probably exciting for you.
It's very exciting, particularly since we have at least two stars which are well known around the world, Tony Todd, the Candyman, and Vincent M. Ward, Oscar from The Walking Dead.
And those two guys have their own little cult followings around them just because Tony Todd is Tony Todd, and Walking Dead is itself a phenomenon these days.
Yeah, Tony Todd is such a gentleman to work for. He really is, and the entire crew was so excited when he came in for two nights to film his role. Everybody wanted a picture with him.
Can you blame him?
No, I can't. The most excited person was the makeup lady.
Oh, nice.
She was shaking. She was so happy to meet him and have her picture taken.
So the film debuted on iTunes this week. How have you gotten any feedback, any performance yet?
Oh, we're just starting to market it right now. I mean, obviously... you can get up on iTunes, but you have to let people know you're there, or it's just really hard to find. So that's why we appreciate your having us on today, and we're launching a social media campaign this week to attract an audience.
Excellent. Happy to help with that, and especially since we're going to be launching a raffle of sorts for people who do rent the movie. And I am happy to announce that people who watch, who actually send in proof that they've rented the film, will have their names entered into a contest to win the actual Bloody Police shirt that Vincent Ward wore in the film.
Yeah, we thought I would save some of the props and costumes because we knew people would want certain actors' costumes and others. And Vincent is very active in the movie, and of course, a bloody police shirt is always better than just a plain old costume. And he was happy enough to let us keep it and use it for something like this.
Cool. So what, tell us about the shirt's, shall we say, journey to stardom?
Well, we actually had to go, we have three or four policemen in the movie, and they had to be outfitted with shirts, pants, holsters, guns. And we actually had to go to a law enforcement shop in downtown Raleigh to actually buy a police shirt to use. It's not just something made up. And can't return them once you get blood on them. So we kept that one. We thought maybe if people rented it and sent in their proof they rented it, they maybe get one chance at it. And if they reviewed us on the site and showed us a screenshot of that, maybe they get the two shots at it.
Sounds like a plan. So that's something for our Slice of Sci-Fi listeners to come to the website and check out the rules. What'll happen is send in proof that you've rented Live Evil on iTunes and you'll be entered into the raffle. You get one entry. If you leave a review after you've rented it, you'll get two entries. So leave a review, get more chances to win Vincent Ward's Bloody Police shirt from the movie Live Evil.
And we sure hope you like it. It's an unusual film. It takes place all in one night on Halloween, small rural town, small police station, and something appears, which no one knows what it is, and disrupts not only the town and threatens to go worldwide. And we have a great cast, and we may do with not a biggest budget, but we may do with a lot. And my son is my partner, and he wrote, directed, and actually did more special effects shots in Live Evil than there were in the first Star Wars.
Wow.
And it took him a long time. That's part of the journey. It took almost a year for him to do that because he did it by himself. So I'm sort of proud of that. And it looks great. It really, we've got a lot of comments on how good it looks.
And from what I remember, it was a fun movie, and it did, the special effects and just the story itself were a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. It's not, I have to warn people, it's, when I say a horror movie, it's not the type of movie that makes you jump out of your seat, but it has a lot of surprises, and it's sort of a throwback to the 70s, 80s type horror movies. It's not like the real scary ones they have today, which I can't watch. I can't go and watch because I get scared. So we hope they like the difference it has.
Excellent. Now, are you guys working on anything else or just promoting this for now?
Well, we are working on something else. We have exclusive rights to one of the most famous characters in the world, and I can't really tell you who it is.
Mm.
We have the rights to do an animated TV series and feature film. And we're gathering our resources, and we are about to produce a trailer in Europe. There's a lot more animated trailer makers in Europe than in the U.S. And we hope to be able to get to the 2019 TV season. Again, it's been created by my partner and son. Of course, he blames his parents for getting him into the movie business because we took him to the movies all the time.
Sure, sure. That's his story, and he's sticking to it, right?
That's exactly right. But when he's successful, I hope he thanks his parents.
Just if you two aren't first when he like takes his Oscar, it's right. You know, you'll be sure to remind him of that, right?
You bet.
Cool. Well, Bruce, thank you so, so much. We are going to include those links to where you can rent Live Evil on iTunes and have a lot more details on the shirt giveaway. So thank you so much for allowing us to host that little promotion for you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. You've been good to us all this past couple of years, and I appreciate it.
So everyone keep an eye out on the website. The contest will start sometime Sunday afternoon, and you'll be able to start renting and reviewing Live Evil and sending in your screenshots of your, I guess, your rental or your purchase, plus your screenshots of your review, so we can keep track of who's leaving reviews and match them up with entries. And I'm not sure yet if this is going to run for 1 week or 2 weeks yet, but we'll have that all sorted out by Sunday, April 29th. And good luck to whoever our lucky winner will be. Hollywood film props are rare, and these are some really cool ones worn by some actors who have a pretty good fan base, so enjoy. But for those of you watching Siren, it airs Thursday nights on Freeform Television, which used to be called ABC Family, but you should know that by now. And their next week's episode is episode 7 out of 10. And you can find the teaser that Rena and I talked about in there. And it is quite heart-wrenching if you have been watching the show. If you haven't been watching the show and you want to get caught up, you can. All you need is to head on over to Hulu and start binging. I recommend it. The mythology is different, and the mystery surrounding Bristol Cove and the history the town has with the mermaids is intriguing. I can't wait to see it unfold a little bit more, but we'll just have to wait until the end of season one and hope we get a season two. I'm all for it. I think the fan reaction has gotten Freeform's attention. At least I hope it has. And if they do renew it for a season two, you know, I'll let you know. But if you have any questions or comments about Siren or Live Evil, the contest, feel free to call in. The number is 602-635-6976, or you can send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, and on Krypton Radio. If you're listening to the show on iTunes or on Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let people know that you're enjoying the show, and maybe they could check it out for themselves and see if they like it too. Every review helps, so please. If you're in there leaving a review for Live Evil, just pop on over to the podcast section and leave us one too. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can follow us on YouTube and on Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And of course, we have the website, sliceofscifi.com. And we have a podcast starting up, brand new, writersafterdark.com. I want to thank everyone who is supporting the show. Your pledges do help keep the bits flowing around here. If you also want to contribute and help keep things running around here, the place to go is Patreon, patreon.com/sliceofscifi. It supports the work being done here on Slice of Sci-Fi, on Slice of Sci-Fi TV, and on Writers After Dark. So thank you very much to everyone who is currently supporting these efforts, and welcome to everyone who's thinking about joining but hasn't done so yet. If you're more interested in doing a one-time donation now and again instead of the monthly pledges through Patreon, there is a PayPal.me link in the show notes that you can follow and do that. So to everyone who is supporting, thank you. Thank you very much. And I'd also like to send out my heartfelt thanks and a great big shout out to my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for the music that adorns this show. They did a great job of it. You know, I'm a rock and roll girl at heart, and they did an awesome job. If you want to check out more music by Sci-Fried, head on over to their website, sci-fried.com, or do a search for them on YouTube. I highly recommend the music video. If you're a Star Trek fan, look for A Tall Ship. That's a moving and touching song, a tribute song they did for the Star Trek 50th anniversary. I highly enjoy it. I even still listen to it a little now and then. I'm not crying, you're crying. But that will do it for this episode. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.